Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Guess what day it is? Hump day! Yeah! You know, I just actually welcome into the playbook for Hump Day Wednesday on Patriots.com radio. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. And I say that only because, believe it or not, did you know that the Hump Day, the Geico Campbell is back? He's going from the small screen to the big screen.
What do you mean?
He's in movie theaters. Yes, the guy, the character, the camel, the Geico camel. He's apparently such a huge hit on internet, YouTube sensation, television, everything because of his Hump Day commercial.
Yeah,
he's in a movie. He's in movie theaters. He's going to be in movie theaters everywhere very, very shortly.
As part of the ad campaign, you mean?
I believe his property actually belongs to Geico. Geico apparently has, what they've done is they have, done some public service announcements for, you know, people shutting up their phones when the movies start in the theaters.
Yes.
Well, guess who's the star?
Hump Day.
Hump Day himself.
Wow.
I just saw it on you. I actually just saw a trailer for the new commercial. You may be able to find it on YouTube because I don't know if I saw it on YouTube or not. But
really?
At any rate, I just saw it. And I said, "Yeah, I laughed my butt off again, all over again." It's just a funny character. The accent, the fact that it's a camel
the
talking
Brooklyn guy. Yeah.
It's a Brooklyn. Yeah, it's a Brooklyn thing, and Brooklyn Matt will understand that. So it's just funny. It's just funny. Anyway, I thought I'd kind of bring that out. So anyway, welcome.
Really, really early digression.
Guess what day it is? There has been a lot of discussion, and some of it started yesterday here, and I know that some of it has kind of trickled through the local talk shows here in the Boston area over the last day or so as well. And I thought this would be a great place to start. And so before we jump in, leading off the show today, Alex Marvez, who covers the NFL, senior writer for Fox Sports 1, he's going to join us here in just a moment. But what I thought I'd do is I'd kind of open this up to you and open it up to our social media aspects as well for you to respond on. Webradio@patriots.com, the email address, the toll-free telephone number, 855-PATS-500. You can send me Twitter, the tweets at JR Broadcaster, and you can hit us up on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, the last name. Here's the thing. Because there's been so much about Aqib Talib and his start of the season, leading the NFL with 4 interceptions through the first 4 weeks, you can arguably say, and maybe even inarguably say, that he has been the Patriots' most valuable defensive player at the very least. Fair assessment there, Eric?
I would say yes.
Okay. And he may become even more valuable now that Vince Wilfork is out for the year.
Possibly.
Okay.
I thought he certainly had his best game that I've ever seen.
I kind of thought so too. So in that regard, I want to ask our listeners today, because everybody knows he's here on a 1-year, $5 million deal. He's staring at free agency again. The Patriots upped him for 1 year, staring at free agency again at the conclusion of the season. The topic of conversation has come up on fan sites and fan boards and on local talk radio shows as well. We've kind of hem and hawed around it. You guys even brought it up at the end of PFW in Progress. So I'm going to ask our listeners today, you got 3 choices here. You re-sign, do you sign him, extend him, do you franchise him, or do you let him go? Think about that. Formulate your thoughts. Send us your emails, your tweets, your Facebook posts, and your phone calls. But do you extend him? Do you franchise him? Do you let him go? And I say let him go, even though I realize that's probably not a very popular choice right now. But in light of what happened and what transpired here in New England over the summer with the whole Aaron Hernandez story, knowing that Aqib Talib, even though he has been a model citizen, he's been a good guy in the locker room, he's not really given a problem to anyone, and that includes the media, I might add, during his time here in New England, he has been very engaging, in fact. But because he brings the track record with him of having some difficulties in the past, do you mess with him? And we're going to, we'll get into that a little bit more, but I do want to kind of lead off the program here by taking a look sort of at a national perspective. We're at the quarter pole of the NFL season now as we enter into week five. It's hard to believe we got fourth of the season already gone. And something that we did talk about on Tuesday's program here was how the rest of the country views New England as one of five undefeated teams right now in the NFL. I said that I think that actually the power rankings take them for what they're worth. I think they're about right. I think the Patriots probably don't belong at four, and I don't think they belong any higher than that. And so to help us with sort of that national perspective, Alex Marvez, who covers the NFL, is a senior writer for Fox Sports 1, joined us here inside Patriots Playbook. Alex, it's John and Eric. Thanks so much for the time today.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate that. And by the way, I have the New England Patriots number four in my AP 32 Pro Power Poll ballot that I do submit every week. I'm one of 12 voters, and it's about right. I mean, that's the thing. By the way, can you guys help me? I don't know who these players are that the Patriots are playing, and I do this for a living. So if you don't mind, fill me in on the 15 or so guys whose names nobody knows, because what they did the other night, Sunday night, to me was such an incredible job of coaching. It speaks well of the front office and that they can find players that really go ahead and fit what the Patriots are trying to do, but my goodness, who are these people?
Yeah, we're still trying to kind of figure that out as well.
Alex, I know they're, I can rattle off all their names, but I still even have trouble, and I'm in the locker room every day, recognizing the faces. Honestly, right? There are some guys on this team who, if you put them in front of me, I might not be able to tell you who it is. Honestly, and it's where, like John said, we're a quarter into the season, and they're unrecognizable. They really are.
But that's the beauty of this team, and I think this is why, you know, from a New England perspective, Alex, and this is what I'm kind of hoping you'll help us with today. It's kind of why, you know, from a Patriot fan perspective here, they should sort of just drink this in a little bit and appreciate it for what it is. And I like the comparisons already that I'm seeing on some, you know, national services and wires about, you know, who's having the better start to the season, either to Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. And I think the initial reaction here is, well, of course, Manning. But when you consider what Tom is working with and who he's working with, you could certainly, I think, make an argument for Tom having a hell of a start too, couldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. No, he's been great. I mean, just think about the offense without him. Yikes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he is the most indispensable part of this team because it just seems like everything else has changed along the way. You've had different running backs, you know, tight ends. You know, are non-existent almost when it comes to pass-catching production. You know, obviously Julian Edelman's done a great job so far, you know, being the Wes Welker in this offense, but so many different pieces at the wide receiver position. As we know, I think Tom's been great. And, you know, look, some people make a big deal out of the body language and always upset on the sideline. Tom is one of the most competitive people, as you guys know, that you will ever meet. He cares. I love to see that passion. I think anyone that knows this guy knows what a team guy he is. He is not trying to undress anybody on the sideline and go ahead and humiliate them. Instead, he wants them to produce. You saw a lot of that, too, quite honestly, from Dan Marino during his heyday with the Miami Dolphins.
Yep.
So I think what Tom has done has been outstanding. And, you know, you talk about MVP. And, yes, Peyton Manning is obviously the front runner in that clubhouse. But I think a really strong argument, you make a great point, John, that a strong argument could be made that Tom Brady's value to this New England Patriots is just as great as Peyton Manning's is to the Broncos.
I would argue that Brady's value to the Patriots right now is as great as it has ever been, simply because of the transformation of this roster, something that we've talked about here over the course of the four, now 5 weeks into the regular season, from the second oldest team to one of the top 10 youngest teams age-wise in the league over a two-year period. That's an amazing transformation.
No, it really is. You know, the thing that worries you, though, is how far can this Patriots team go with so many young players? And that's the thing that I wonder about. Because, look, and not to knock the Atlanta Falcons, they're a good team. I don't think they're a great team. I think they're a little bit overhyped right now as far as the quality of that organization, especially because of the injuries.
Yeah.
But one of the things that ends up happening, and I think we saw this through the years with Peyton Manning and the Colts, okay, you go and you blow through what was a mediocre AFC South, then you start playing good teams in the playoffs, and you get exposed because of so many other players, the talent level on those teams is just as good. How far can this Pats team go? How far can these young players evolve? I think that's what's going to be the big thing for the Patriots going forward. Can this be that next group that's going to be able to take the Patriots up and beyond while Tom Brady's still one of the best in the game?
Alex Marvez covers the NFL, NFL senior writer for Fox Sports 1. He joined us here inside the playbook. So you mentioned you have the Patriots fourth in your power ranking, and I think that's fair. Do you think that the Patriots are getting an accurate assessment from those who cover the league around the country, from fans, based on your observations? And if so, why? If not so, why?
You know, the problem that they have is that they're too good. This is the problem with the Patriots, right? I mean, the first team in NFL history to win 10 games for 10 consecutive seasons. Yep. So the bar is set so high that, you know, 4-0 in Kansas City is so celebrated. It's this incredible job by Andy Reid.
Yeah.
And then with the Patriots, you pick them apart, right?
Yeah.
And you take shots at them. And that's the whole thing. And that's why I think what is being done in New England is going under the radar. And you guys were talking about Aqib Talib and his value to this Patriots defense. I think that New England's defense is very underrated for the job that they've done. Now, clearly going forward without Vince Wilfork, a monstrous task for this defense because of Vince's versatility and the fact he's one of the greatest defensive linemen in the game. You're not going to replace him with one guy. You're not going to have to go and do it from an X and O standpoint and go ahead and hope that a rotation of guys is able to go ahead and fill those giant shoes left behind. But I think this Pats defense, you can't ask for much more than what they've done. They're not super flashy. They're not nicknamed, anything like that. But they've gone out week after week and gotten the job done. I think that the Patriots, of all things, I think flying a little bit under the radar as far as what they've been able to get done. And honestly, some of it, guys, has to do with the fact that not a lot of high regard for Buffalo, the Jets, and the Bucks. But I think that Atlanta victory should open some people's eyes, and especially if they beat Cincinnati coming up, because now we got a very interesting two-week stretch here. Cincinnati and then New Orleans coming in to Foxborough. Going to be very interesting to see how the Pats fare in those games.
Absolutely. And I have to admit, just based on the Atlanta game alone this last week, which we both thought he would probably be a loss, especially with a road game, but it's amazing how one game can turn your perspective around. And Eric and I haven't had a chance to go over this, but honestly, we were looking at, you know, hopefully getting one out of this three-game stretch. Now I think there's a reasonable chance for this team to be competitive and maybe win all three of these games.
I think you're very right. You know, Cincinnati's done a real good job of beating themselves so far. I'll be quite honest with you. And, you know, I'm a little surprised. They're not firing on all cylinders. Really, last week, their defensive strategy was horrible in the tight end position when it came to Jordan Cameron. He just chewed them up. It'll be interesting to see if Rob Gronkowski is a go this week. I know Rob in the locker room today talking about, I'd love to be able to talk about football again, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I had to talk about being injured. But
right.
It would be huge for them because you look at what Jordan Cameron did to that secondary, and the Bengals are very weak at the safety position. So, and I expect from a Cincinnati standpoint, without Vince Wilfork there, Atlanta can't run the football right now. They are a one-dimensional type of offense. Well, Cincinnati's got Gio Bernard, and they've got the law firm, as we know, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis. I expect them to really try to test this Patriots defense without Vince Wilfork there to try to go ahead, focus on that, create some opportunities for A.J. Green in the passing game. But I am going to be, and I'm fired up. I'm going to this game,
good,
covering it for Fox Sports 1. And the cool part is seeing Aqib Talib go up against A.J. Green and how the Patriots will try to go ahead and take away A.J. Green and force others to beat them. Because you look at what a great job that the secondary did the other day. Took away Tony Gonzalez and really limited Julio Jones' effectiveness.
Yeah, and it's a good point about the running game for Cincinnati, because had Steven Jackson been healthy for Atlanta, I wonder how much the Falcons' game plan would have changed, because Wilfork went out basically right after the first snap, essentially, so early in the first quarter. I wonder if they would have tried to run the ball more and how that would have changed the complexion of the game. So I'm kind of interested to see what Cincinnati does and just how well the no-name, unrecognizable players can step up in there and maybe hold up the way they did against Atlanta, which wasn't really trying to run between the tackles all that much.
No, and the Falcons are a mess right now offensively. They are, just because of that, well, what you're talking about, not having Steven Jackson has created an imbalance for them. It's really led to some exposure of that offensive line, and you saw Sam Baker go out with an injury. Media reports say he's probably not going to be able to go this week for the Falcons. And, you know, you wonder about teams sometimes. They make it in the postseason, they have their run, and then they fall a little bit short. You know, the Baltimore Ravens were an exception. They made it to the playoffs for five straight years and won a Super Bowl finally. Usually it doesn't happen that way. Teams that make it to the postseason and don't get to the Super Bowl sometimes fade away, and you really have to wonder at this point if that window of opportunity is closing, for at least for this group of Atlanta Falcons, some of the veteran players that they have, and a lot of it is because of injuries. They are a banged-up team right now. You did not see the Atlanta Falcons at their best the other night, and I give kudos to the Patriots, though, because I thought the Falcons were going to win that game. It was sort of one of those, quote, must-win type of early-season games that we always overhype, but it is true. I mean, the
sure.
Falcons were trying to get off the schneid there. Instead, a team that's used to finishing opponents has not been able to do it three times this year.
Alex, let me ask you your thoughts then on Aqib Talib and his start. Would you consider him a shutdown corner, even if not, is he the type of player that you can actually build a defense around, do you think?
Yeah, this is what the great question. I think it's such a great question that you asked your listeners today about what do you do with Aqib Talib?
Yeah.
And as Aaron Hernandez taught us, a very valuable lesson, how we think we know people, but we really don't in the media, You know, I don't know who Aqib Talib is. I know what I've read. I know it concerns the heck out of me. And I know that this is a guy, since he's gotten to New England, there hasn't been a single bit of any sort of problem. Mm-hmm. But what do you do with him going forward? And, you know, one option out there that you didn't list was D, which to me I would play out, which is you don't extend him now, but you go ahead and try to do it in the offseason. And then you get desperate for that franchise tag, but not throwing a boatload of money his way right now. But I will tell you this, with each game that Aqib Talib is playing, wow, his value does go up. And I wouldn't tell you he's Richard Sherman or Patrick Peterson, but I think he is in that upper tier of cornerbacks, probably at the lower end of it. But I think he is a type of guy that you can stick on another person's best wide receiver and win a lot of those battles. And I think that's something that the Patriots have lacked since Asante Samuel when he was in his heyday back 2007, 2008. So it gives the New England Patriots a chance to do more defensively, makes up for some of the bad picks they've had in terms of cornerbacks in the draft, guys who have not worked out for whatever reason. And I just think the guy has been he's just been a great acquisition for the Patriots. And I think there are some teams that are probably kicking themselves right now, asking themselves, why didn't we make a little bit of a better offer, a multi-year offer to Aqib Talib? Because maybe he'd be helping us right now.
And one big difference between his situation and Hernandez that you mentioned was how popular Talib seems to be in the Patriots locker room right now.
Yeah.
To a man, Hernandez wasn't that type of player, that type of person, I should say, in the locker room or off the field. He wasn't a guy that clowned around or buddied around with too many of his teammates. He'd joke around with the media plenty. He did that quite a bit with us, but he wasn't a guy that was always hanging out with his other teammates, and there wasn't a lot of interaction between him and them. Talib, very different. It's a guy who has really felt like he's made this a home, I think, and that's one factor that might play into the teams wanting to re-sign him earlier as opposed to later, taking a risk and trying to get him later.
No, I hear where you're coming from. I just don't know, and Eric, you can answer this, how much of that was ever out in the media about Aaron's strained relationships with his teammates before all this went down?
Well, I think it was something that we all kind of noticed, but it wasn't really
reported.
Yeah, because there was no reason to, you know what I mean? But once it was a story, then you kind of put connect the dots and say, oh, yeah, that makes sense now.
Yeah, I mean, and it's tough, brother. Trust me, as a beat writer for all these years that I had to do it, I know how difficult it is, especially going in there day after day. And you're right, as long as Aaron Hernandez was showing up to work and doing his part of the bargain, you know, there was no reason to write about that stuff. And I hope Aqib has it right. I like the success stories in the league rather than the ones that are so negative and guys who end up losing all their money or end up running into problems with the law or have drug issues, things like that. I hope that Aqib Talib was scared straight by what happened early in his career, but I also don't know, and honestly, I don't know how many people can. Where is that guy who lost his temper with a teammate, and got into a fight at the rookie symposium? Where is that guy who allegedly assaulted a cab driver back in Tampa? Where is that guy who got into something with a gun back then? And the Patriots organization, as you know, after what happened with Aaron Hernandez, do they want to risk their reputation and risk risk the blemish on the shield by going ahead and giving a lot of money to someone who's not going to represent the team properly?
Right.
That is, of course, a huge, huge factor, and it will have to enter into any sort of extension or contract or situation, what have you, that the Patriots will enter into with anyone, because they've taken hits in the offseason for, quote-unquote, not doing their due diligence, even though they've told us that they have. And I think it's reasonable to expect that they have done their due diligence, that you sometimes just can't anticipate what people are going to do. And I wonder how gun-shy they'll be as we get into this process with a guy like Talib who brought some baggage with him. And again, we've said he's been model since he's been here. But will that make these guys actually be a little bit reluctant, especially in light of the fact that they historically have undervalued this position? And we've talked about Asante Samuel already and how, especially defensive backs as a whole, forget, Lawyer Malloy and Ty Law before him and all that kind of stuff that's going on. I just wonder if this makes sense at all for them to even entertain the discussion before the season's over.
Well,
I don't think before the season's over you do it. I just don't. And I don't know if you want to run that risk. I really don't. And you know what? I don't know how much more it would cost you down the road if he's able to become a free agent. And you know why? Because I think other teams are asking the same question.
Sure. Sure.
Well, here's one other argument for trying to get him under wraps now. If you decide to wait and say, well, we can always franchise him if things don't work out, fine. But you can't change any contract language or massage any contract language in a franchise tag. A franchise tag is a franchise tag. You get the, you get the top 10 average. That's it. The top 5 average, and that's it. if you try to extend him now, at least you can maybe put clauses in there that say
that tie to his behavior.
That tie to his behavior, which you know, that's a learning experience from the Hernandez situation.
And to be specific here, you lose that when you franchise him.
Correct. Correct. Yep. You have a standard boilerplate contract that is just based on the average of the top five.
So that should give us all reason to pause and consider this, shouldn't it?
Well, yeah, but here's the other thing, too. Who's to say Aqib is willing to sign that type of contract? Yeah.
No, he might. You're right. Yeah. He might be unwilling to, but at least I think you have to do your due diligence and ask.
Right.
I'm with you. Here's the other thing, too, though, guys, and this can play an effect on a player. And what if you just think about it in everyday life? It's when your salary, you start talking about it during a season when you need to be concentrating on football. Let's say the Patriots go and approach Aqib Talib and say, okay, we want to sign you and we're going to give you this, but we're going to put all these bells and whistles along with it. What if the guy gets upset about that? What if the guy is like, wow, well, these guys still don't trust me by this time? And all of a sudden it goes ahead and sours the attitude of someone who has been so far, like you say, at least to your knowledge, exemplary from a team standpoint. You know, there are some teams that just literally cut off negotiations once the season begins. The Houston Texans are an example of that. They'll go right up to the deadline to try to get something done. If they can, great. If not, well, we'll see you in February, and we'll talk about it then. Maybe in this case, because of what's gone on with the Patriots and the Hernandez situation, with Talib himself excelling like he is right now, maybe you just leave it alone and come back to it in February and hope that the guy wants to be here, would be willing to accept language, or maybe even if the Patriots don't offer it, maybe he just likes being in New England, maybe he wants to be there going forward, maybe he would accept it, but approach it then rather than upset the apple cart right now.
That's good stuff. Alex, before we let you go, just one quick thought on the AFC East. It looks a little bit better than we originally anticipated. Can it last for either Miami or, for that matter, Buffalo or New York?
My partner on SiriusXM NFL Radio, Bill Polian, says you don't start paying attention to things until week six.
Yep.
And that's what he says. That's what everything starts to show up. So, I mean, I just, you know, the Jets, look, we know what they're going to be throughout the season. They're going to be a very good defensive team that runs the football. And when they have to pass, usually unless they're playing a really bad secondary like they did last week because Buffalo's so banged up, they're going to lose. And in Buffalo's case, I give a lot of credit to their coaching staff. They've been able to overcome many of the injuries in their secondary. You saw the job that they did when they went ahead and beat Baltimore, intercepting Joe Flacco five times. Kiko Alonso's been an epiphany at the middle linebacker spot for them. That being said, I again look at that as a team that's sort of a 6-10 type of team as E.J. Manuel grows as a quarterback. That leaves the Miami Dolphins, and I think the Dolphins got exposed a little bit on Monday night, actually quite a bit, and just being finally in that big game atmosphere. You know, and look, when the Patriots went down to the Superdome last time, how difficult it was for them. I mean, they got routed. I mean, they were pulling Tom Brady late in that game, if I'm not mistaken, back a couple years ago.
That's
so
right.
Miami got exposed a little bit, their first time really on a big stage where it mattered on a Monday night football game, but they're young, they're talented, and a lot of the young players they have upside, but of course, got to do a better job protecting Ryan Tannehill. He's got to get rid of the football better. 18 sacks so far, leads the NFL. Not so good on that standpoint. I think the Dolphins can push the Patriots, but they are still the cream of the crop in the AFC East.
Good stuff. Alex, thanks so much for the time today. We sure appreciate it. We'll look forward to chatting with you on down the line.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
All right.
We'll see you in Cincy this weekend.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Alex Marvez, Fox Sports 1. You can follow him on Twitter as well, at Alex Marvez, AlexMarvez is how you spell his last name. With some good perspective, I think. You know, we always like to get a read of the temperature, what it's like outside of our own little atmosphere.
It's very good to do that because sometimes I feel like a Washington politician.
Yeah.
Where I'm in a bubble and all I hear is...
Do we actually have Washington politicians right
now?
Yeah,
well, unfortunately...
Are they on furlough too?
Unfortunately, we do still have them.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
But that's what I kind of feel like sometimes where, you know, Washington is its own little bubble and people only hear the noise that's going on in there and they forget that there's a whole big other country that they're representing out there.
Right.
And I sometimes think like we get sucked into that too a little bit where we're so close to it that we don't see the forest for the trees. Mm-hmm. And it is nice to get someone who doesn't cover the team every day to maybe shed some light on it that we wouldn't otherwise have seen.
Good stuff. All right. That was Alex Marvez again from Fox Sports 1. Let's reset it for you here if you're just joining us at the bottom of the hour. Topic of the day, and basically the big question of the day here has to do with Aqib Talib. We know that he, you know, has certainly gotten off to a superb start through the first four games of the season. He is a huge reason why the Patriots seem to have improved themselves defensively thus far. You can certainly make a legitimate argument that he is the most valuable player on the Patriots' defensive side of the ball, especially in light of the fact that Vince Wilfork is gone for the remainder of the season with his Achilles injury.
Officially, not yet.
Well, officially not yet, but we saw the picture tweeted out by his wife yesterday, his foot in a cast after surgery.
Yeah.
He has not officially been put on injured reserve yet, and Bill Belichick was asked that earlier today, and he said, well, when we have something to announce, we'll announce it.
Right.
That's just plain assed silly.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's just silly. It's silly.
Right.
And, you know, with all due respect to the head coach, that's just silly. And I don't even know the way to put it.
Silly.
Answer the question. You know, I mean, I feel like
I
almost feel like I want to be like Albert Breer and I want to go after him, you know, and say, you know, the whole, you know, he was, you know, he wasn't on the active roster, whatever it was, a couple of weeks ago.
He was inactive.
Yeah, the whole inactive thing. Right. I understand why Bert Breer did what he did. I do. I get it. Because he's trying to get something that he does not want to answer. So if Bill doesn't want to answer it, he should just say so. I'm not answering that question. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Correct.
He could still use a brush up, I think, in PR 101 skills. That's all I'm saying. You know, answer the question that's been asked or don't answer it.
But that is another, you said Tlaib's the big story of the day. And Wilfork, I think, would be 1B because, not just because he hasn't been, I mean, that'll happen. That's a formality. That's going to happen probably, I would imagine, either by the end of the day or by tomorrow. But would you feel confident going with what they have, or do you think there needs to be an outsider brought in to fill that spot?
We discussed that here on the program yesterday, and the general consensus was let's play from within right now, because considering the street free agents that were out there and some of the names, the one that I actually liked, believe it or not, who has experience here in camp, is Myron Pryor. And I thought they're maybe bringing someone like him back in if he's healthy to come back in.
Yeah,
that's the big key. And that's the way it was with everybody, with the exception of Richard Seymour. Everybody else is a health issue.
Yeah.
Gerard Warren's name also came up in the discussion. And we know he's pretty much decided, I think, to hang it up.
A little long in the tooth, yeah.
A little long in the tooth, but could he come back for, say, 10 weeks? I mean, if you really needed him?
I don't know.
See, well, that's the question. I mean, he would be probably another good a choice as any. But what do you already have in tank? What do you already have in the fold here? Marcus Forston, we anticipate, probably get a call up. Maybe some sort of maneuvering with A.J. Francis as well. Who knows? We don't really know. Armin Armstead, his issue still hasn't been solved as well. But he would certainly fit into that mix as well on the defensive line. So you might already have your answer as long as it's that answer is ready to go.
Mm.
You might. But our question to you is, has to do everything with Aqib Tlaib. And knowing that he's on a one-year deal, pays him $5 million this year, and then he faces free agency again next year, if you're signing the check, if you're Mr. Kraft, or if you're making the football decision, if you're Bill Belichick, we gave you a chance to be Bill Belichick yesterday. This is 2 days in a row I'm going to give you a chance to be Bill Belichick here. And we're going to say, sort of take our own unscientific poll here, and we'll issue the results at the end of the show today. But you've got three options. One, pay the man. Sign him now. Or re-up him as best as you can. Number two, franchise him. For obvious reasons, you can understand why you might want to franchise him. Place the tag on him. Number three, let him go. Considering the track record and everything else that's happened in the past, if you're one of those people that really is concerned about public perception, which we just talked to Alex Marvez of Fox about, if you're one of those fans that's really concerned about how your team is viewed around the country, around the globe, for that matter, do you risk this? And I would also add to that equation, considering how the Patriots value the position of corner over the years, under Bill Belichick, and knowing what's come in here and what's gone out of here, is this worth the trouble or the effort to keep Aqib Tlaib around? Many different ways you get us here on the program. Email webradio@patriots.com. The telephone number, 855-PATS-500. Toll free, we pick up the dime, 855-PATS-500, or you can hit us up on our Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398. Twitter, @JR Broadcaster. And again, thank you for the new Twitter follows. It's great. Love to have you. Glad to have you aboard.
Where are we on that?
I've averaged about 20 pickups a week, and we're in 5 weeks. So I picked up about 100 new followers.
Pretty good.
Which is really cool. Yeah. I'm very, very excited about that. My own small-term little fiefdom here.
Yeah.
That's great. But, you know, it's all good. And if you're not following on Twitter, I hope you do, because we will share lots of good things with you here and not kill you, you know, with all of the incessant, you know, goofy stuff that you see people tweet about from time to time. But at JR Broadcaster, the Twitter address, Facebook, you can find me, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, is how you spell the last name. And if you're not a friend on Facebook, I'll submit the request, and then we can post and chat and do all that stuff, especially during the show, which we take a lot of the Facebook posts live. So what do you do with Aqib Talib? What's your initial inclination? As I ask you the question, you initially considered the question today. If you're Bill, if you're Mr. Kraft, what do you do?
I think you start the discussion now about...
So get the ball rolling, even 4 weeks into the season.
Yeah, I mean, maybe wait another couple of weeks, but you don't have a... You know, see if this is more than just an aberration. And you know, he's made progress. He's playing better week after week. After this stretch of tough games against Cincy and New Orleans, if he's still playing at that high level, now you're starting to approach midseason. Yeah, I think you start talking to him.
Interesting. My initial thought here is, I kind of side with Alex in a sense that, you know, and as you talked about his partner Bill Polian, you know, that you get a general sense of where a guy's going to be 6 weeks or so into the season. I would probably tend to use that as a bench watermark a little bit more. I might throw out a feeler or two, but I don't think there's any way that you want to, if you're as good as playing your cards close to the vest as we all believe the Patriots are, why then would you approach people now when clearly we're all talking about Aqib Talib? Wouldn't you want this to die down somewhat? Now, I realize you risk going the other way, that this guy takes off and has an unbelievable MVP type of season and basically saves your team from the, you know, from the tar pits or whatever. And then you've probably lost out on the opportunity, to talk to him because you just dilly-dallied around and you didn't do anything about it when you had an opportunity to do it. But I think if you're going after him now, then you're signaling to his representatives, you're signaling to Aqib himself that, okay, well, you know, we like the way things are going. We want to get you locked in. And so, you know, if you're confident in your abilities, why would you want to walk in now when, oh, I don't know, 6 or 7 weeks from now, you might be able to stand to make yourself a heck of a lot more money as long as you just continue to stay the course. You see where I'm going here?
Yeah.
I don't think you want to play your hand too quickly here.
No, that's why I said I would wait a few more weeks. Right. But I wouldn't wait too long if he continues to play the way he's been playing. I wouldn't let this get to the end of the season.
Now that I would agree with. I would say that you don't want it to go to the end of the season, yeah. But at what point do you say, all right, guess what, we need to talk here. How much further do you let it go? Because like I said, if this guy's season takes off, you know, into an MVP caliber season, then have you lost out on your opportunity if you don't, say, make a contact now?
I think you wait till about midseason.
Turn the corner?
Yeah.
Get to the bye week?
Get through this tough stretch. Yeah, maybe during the bye week. I mean, it was during the bye week when they got him last year, right when we came back from London. And, you know, that will have been the year mark since he has been here. I think that's probably a logical time to start.
We can say, hey, guess what, Aqib, it's been a year.
Yeah.
We like the way things are going. You're having a great season. You want to talk about an extension?
That's when I would do it. Not wait much further than that. Again, provided he is continuing to play at this level.
Now, if you're Aqib Talib and you are continuing to play at this level and you sense that this might be your once-in-a-lifetime shot at grabbing big bucks, I mean, we're talking, what, $8, $9, $10 million a year, whatever it might end up being, do you say thanks, but I'm going to wait it out?
I honestly don't know what goes on in his head. I'm not going to pretend to.
Right.
But it depends what the Patriots are talking to me about, what numbers they're throwing out there.
What do you think numbers would be deserving for someone like that, knowing what they've paid in the past to that position?
I don't think $10 million is going to happen.
No, I would agree.
Eight, maybe?
That's what I was thinking.
But not 10?
I was thinking 7.5 to 8, maybe.
With, again, lots of clauses that protect the team.
3 years, 25, something like that.
Yeah, and behavior and language that involves, you know, you don't get it if you...
The Patriots are about $6.5 million under the cap for next year. Okay. So there is some wiggle room to do what you need to do. Gives them a little bit of room. Even with Aaron Hernandez's contract, you know, that they're saddled with, there is some wiggle room there. I believe the total was about $6.5 million, last I saw.
Okay.
So that would seem to make an $8 million. I mean, you know, you got to figure out a way to pay him. You're probably going to pay him on an escalating scale so you can fit in under the cap, right? You'd have to.
Yeah.
You're $6.5 million under. If you're going to offer him $8 million, you're going to have to figure something out.
Well, yeah, and there are other players that are contracts coming up. And you know.
Actually, the only one I think, Eric, believe it or not, that it might be of interest right now is Brandon Spikes. I read up on this a couple of days ago.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring up his name because as I'm watching the film, as I do every Monday, this game in Atlanta particularly, he was a rumor.
Yeah.
He had a few snaps, but especially now that nickel has become their de facto base defense because all these teams are going with spreading,
yeah,
spreading it up.
Yeah.
He's the one getting sent to the bench. So I don't know how much you really need to make him a priority if you're going to continue to be playing mostly nickel all
mm-hmm,
the time.
Mm-hmm.
You can get – I mean, I you can get anyone to sit on the bench and come in sparingly. You don't need to overpay a guy to do that.
I can do that.
Yeah.
And I'll do that for way less than what he's getting.
So I think there's some money you could save right there.
Probably have to be a consideration. All right, that's why we asked the question here, web radio at patriots.com, 508-298-0398, or toll-free, 855-PATS-500, at JR Broadcaster, Twitter, John.Rook, Facebook. On Facebook, let's see, did I get something here? Hold on. Page is freezing up on me. Here we go. Nori says, lock up Tlaib with a 4 to 5 year contract. He is one of the very few corners out there who can get the job done on limiting opposing team's best receiver. These kind of cornerbacks rarely come around. Now he says, this is on my initial reaction at the moment. I want to see how he does up until midseason to start talking multi-year contract. If he keeps performing, pay the man. Did we not say almost the exact same thing about Asante Samuel? And
yeah,
we know
and
what this team did.
Well, but hopefully they've learned the lesson that it takes takes a while to replace a guy like that. And what was the biggest Achilles heel of this team? One of the biggest Achilles heels of this team? The secondary the last few years. They couldn't find a guy, which is why they went out and got Tlaib last year in the first place. They needed help there. The pass rush and the secondary were the two weakest points on this team.
Right.
Because they let guys like Ty Law go and Asante Samuel go. I would hope that they've learned the lesson now that that's an important position.
Okay.
Do you think they have?
I
think they have based on the fact that they went out and got Tlaib last year.
Okay, that may very well be, but I'm not sure that they have learned their lesson overall, and they value a spot, and they're only going to pay X amount for it, and that's that. And I think that's how they've always done their business here. And if I had to predict now, and I said this on the show yesterday, especially if the Patriots somehow win the Super Bowl this year, I'll repeat it for right now and for all time here. If the Patriots somehow win the Super Bowl this year, Aqib Tlaib will not be back.
Because he won't get franchised?
I can't imagine that. That's a good point. He could be franchised in that instance. That's the only way that he comes back, because he won't deal with the Patriots. He has his ring. He'll want to go get his money. He'll want to entertain other offers.
Yeah,
it's up to the Patriots.
If they win it and he's a key factor, he'll get it.
And
offers.
What would the Patriots, though, be paying, conceivably, if they franchise tag Tlaib? You know, it's the average of the top five salaries.
Right.
So that's in the ballpark of what?
Honestly, I don't know off the top of my head, but it's probably going to be
over 7, right?
I would think so, yeah. But it also is probably going to be more than what they want to pay him.
Exactly the point. Exactly the point. I don't believe that they're going to feel like that position is worth it based on their track record, which is why I say I don't think he'll be here. I just don't. Now, they could pull an about-face and decide that this is the one guy. We don't want to make a mistake like we did against Asante Samuel. And if they do, well, then bully for them. Then they learn from their mistakes. I'm questioning whether or not they've learned from them, because they do have what we call fiscal familiarity mm-hmm. within the organization. Mm-hmm. And I think they follow that to a T. And I think they always have over the 14 years that Bill Belichick has been here.
Mm-hmm.
That's a simple fact. You can't deny that. And, yeah, they've made some mistakes, but they've always said, well, yeah, we've made some mistakes, but we've also done pretty well for ourselves. And, yeah, you'd have to admit, you look at the big picture, they've done pretty well for themselves. So what's the difference between doing pretty well for yourself and doing great? Not much. You could do great if you just alter your way of thinking, maybe just a little bit. Just a skosh, right? Just a little. Mm. Just a smidge. Got any others?
I like the skosh.
I like the skosh too. But, you know, that's just all I'm saying here is that, you know, I don't know. Until they do it, we have every reason to question that they've learned from a mistake.
I hope they have, because cornerback is such an important position. If you have a guy who can play and cover any receiver that they throw against you, man, that's invaluable in this league.
Sure. Sure.
Don't let it go.
Hey, I'm with you. I don't think I'd let him go either. I just don't think that they'll keep him. My heart tells me, you know, I think you got to sign the guy, because then you could really lock him down and you could have something special potentially over the next 2 or 3 years. But my gut tells me they're not going to do this, because their track record has indicated that they don't do this for this position. This is not quarterback. It's not even nose tackle. It's a cornerback. And they feel like they can get that. That's a dime a dozen. I would argue that point. Based on, you know, the proof being in the pudding here.
Exactly.
But I'm not sure they're convinced that that's the case. I'd love to see, you know, I'd like to see their stats and their facts and their figures to back up their argument here. I don't know, you know, if maybe this is something they're fighting about internally. We don't really know that. But if they don't feel like the position is of value, well, why? You're asking guys to go out there and challenge and match up with Julio Jones and Roddy White and Demaryius Thomas and all these guys that are just big, long, tall. You know, how do you defend Megatron? I mean, the only way you can do it is with a guy like Aqib Talib, who's smaller but has got the athleticism to make plays. Mm. You have to have arguably, and maybe even inarguably, Eric, you have to have your most athletic guy in the field probably playing a cornerback.
Yeah, probably.
The most athletic player. In other words, a guy that can run forwards and backwards almost with the same, you know, well, obviously it's impossible, same speed, but let's just say with the same effortless effort, be able to spin, turn.
I think it's the most challenging position to play in football.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. Cornerback is
physically challenging.
Because
playing quarterback at this level, the mental aspect that goes into that is absurd.
Okay, but physically.
The most physically challenging.
Because of the pressure put on you on every snap of the ball.
And you're doing things a lot of times in reverse, as you said.
Right, and you're having to run backwards, and you can look really silly if you stumble.
Mm.
I mean, you look really silly, and then, you know, that's how
the offense knows where it's going.
That's how you get a nickname like, you know, Elvis Patterson got. Toast.
Toast, yeah.
One of the best all-time nicknames.
Yeah.
And that sucker had to get stuck with that one.
Poor thing.
No kidding. So who's this year's version of Toast? All right, what about a practice report for today?
Sure. There were three guys missing, and one of them, John, a little surprising, don't know why. Stephen Ridley
was out today.
Yeah, not there when we went out there at the beginning. Maybe it wasn't injury related. We'll find out in a little over an hour when the report comes. But Vince Wilfork obviously was one, and Matthew Slater. So those two were not surprises. But Ridley was. Don't know what the explanation is there, and I'm anxious to find that out. Guys who were there, though, of note, Gronk, Amendola, of course. Both of those guys spoke afterwards. And Aaron Dobson, who many of you, the last we saw of him,
right, we weren't
was
sure.
Getting the whiplash, it looked like, and had a really serious, what appeared to be a really serious injury. He was back out on the field today. So hopefully it was just muscle soreness more than anything else that caused him to leave the game, and hopefully he'll be okay.
He did take an awkward hit to the neck. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I really got scared when I saw the replays and the way he was clutching at his I thought initially maybe he'd broken his collarbone or something because he was reaching sort of for the where his shoulder pads were.
Mm-hmm.
It was really hard to tell, but it was his neck. And he was out there today, so that's great news for him and for the team. Amendola, Gronk, both of them saying the same thing we've been hearing for the last few weeks. Although I will say Amendola looked like he was running more smoothly, more naturally than he had than he has in since the injury.
Okay.
So that's encouraging. I think his chances of playing are increasing by the day.
Best guess right now, who goes?
I'd say better chance Amendola than Gronk, believe
really?
Me.
Really? Why?
Because Gronk's comments today were fall into the line of methinks the lady doth protest too much, in that he was going overboard with how much he and the team are on the same page with his injury, trying to refute the reports over the weekend about how his camp doesn't want him to play until he's absolutely ready. When you come out and make those kind of statements over and over again, I think that lends more credibility to the fact that there's something to the story.
Does it not make sense, though, for him to come back this week because of the fact that they kept him off the PUP to start the year? And if they had put him on the PUP, it would have been 6 weeks before he could come back. This is week five. So if it's week five and he's not back, why the hell wasn't he on the PUP?
Yeah, which lends more credibility to the story from over the weekend.
Right.
So the fact that he came out today and was saying, no, everyone's been on agreement since day one, I'm not buying completely. So I still think my gut feeling is the family wanted him to start on PUP and that maybe they're going to essentially go through a PUP and maybe not get him back until week seven. So that's why I think Amendola
then
is more
team
likely
is,
to come
the team
back.
Has screwed themselves without having the roster flexibility then. And that's just
possibly.
Dumb. And that's just dumb.
And again, speculation on my part. I'm not saying that I know anything, but I'm saying just the way this is playing out and with the report over the weekend that I lend some credibility to, that's the hypothesis I've come up with. So I think more likely Amendola than Gronk.
Wow. Yesterday, I thought it was all going to be a slam dunk that Gronk was coming back. After hearing his comments today and hearing what you have to say, I'm not so sure that's the case anymore. I suppose we'll just have to wait and see. But I mean, I think we're getting to the point now where there's a source of frustration that's starting to build a little bit. And I'm
with
not
who?
Sure. Well, with Gronk and with the whole way that this thing's being handled. I mean, come out and say he isn't playing until X or something. So that way the stuff dies off and it goes away.
The easiest way to do that would have been to put him on PUP.
There you go, which is what I thought they should have done to begin with. But they didn't want to do it. And I'm guessing maybe, sort of along your hypothesis here, that maybe the Patriots wanted him to come back earlier, but then he was balking at coming back earlier, hoping that maybe they'd put the pressure on him and see him, you know, hey, it's not so bad, Gronk, come on back, and that he would capitulate. And apparently he has not.
Doesn't seem like it. Although he's putting the, toe in the company line today.
Interesting.
Yeah. Going a little overboard with it. That's why I think that there's a little something to this.
How many people are you aware of in the camp of Gronk, in the circle of Gronk, in this decision-making process? Any ideas?
Him and his dad.
Pretty much?
You know, his dad, his mom,
yeah.
His family, his
yeah.
closest... Those closest to him, his family.
We here have, on this particular show, been a little bit critical over his return last year after the initial break because he hurt himself as he came right back, and that, of course, led to a lot of his off-season difficulties injury-wise, and so we're wondering maybe he came back a little early last year. And
I remember, John, seeing a guy warming up in the season finale, regular season finale against Miami, trying to block and putting that left hand behind his back because it was still in his head that
he couldn't do
he
this.
Couldn't do it. What the hell is it? What the hell am I doing out here?
Right.
That's the vibe I got. And he escaped that game without doing anything wrong. But as we saw 2 weeks later in the playoff
game,
the divisional game,
didn't work out.
So I wonder how much the playing that early against Miami and practicing for those 2 weeks contributed to what happened against Houston. if they had just started him against Houston, I wonder, and didn't practice him until that week, I wonder if that would have been different.
Hmm. Share an email here.
So that's why I think there's credibility to the family saying, hey, look, this guy's in the prime of his career. We don't want him doing anything stupid.
Yes, and that does make a lot of sense. And it could be part of the reason why we haven't seen Gronk come back already, because he seems to be practicing what little we've seen of practice. He seems to be practicing well. He is talking, and usually injured players do not talk, but he has been for a while. He hasn't said much. Amendola, for that matter, has also been talking.
Yeah, both of them.
And neither one has come back. So it tells me that, you know, if they're not ready to come back, they're awfully close. You just have to wonder what the decision will be to put him over the hump. Maybe it stands to reason. Look, you know what? This is a gravy game. This is one of those games, and we talked a little about last week being a gravy game. But, you know, this one against Cincinnati is also a gravy game.
If you can get through it with a win,
man, that's great, but you didn't necessarily expect it. You know, and maybe you come back and bring these guys and save them for the home game, you know, with New Orleans, because then you don't have the travel issues and yada yada and having to get ready early and all that kind of stuff. And plus, arguably, New Orleans brings in a better team, period.
New Orleans looked good the other night.
Well, they did. They did. I thought Alex Marvez brought out a very good point. Miami looked a little so shell-shocked.
Yeah.
They just didn't look like they were ready for prime time yet.
They're a young team that's not ready yet.
Right.
And I wonder about the youth on this team and whether that'll show itself at some point.
Well,
because
we have seen the youth on this team begin to show itself in, you know, sputtering offensive starts over the first couple of weeks. That's been a byproduct. Mm-hmm. The thing that saved the Patriots from those two games being losses was the defense.
Yeah.
Because there's more experience on the defense.
True. Although the defense contributed a lot to letting Atlanta back in the game the other day.
They did.
A game that was starting that. It went from a tight, close game to a blowout to a close game in a matter of only a few minutes.
That's very true. But, again, the offense also picked up the slack and moved the ball and scored the ball, which they hadn't done in the previous three games.
Ran the ball well,
So, you know, okay, you know, the defense picked us up for the first 3 weeks. Now the offense is starting to come around, and they actually, you know, picked up the defense against Atlanta, and the end result was a W.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is how a football team works. Sometimes the defense has got to do it. Sometimes the offense has got to do it. Best thing I can say here is that these two units are responding to one another. They're picking up the slack when the other guys need it. What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. That's football right there.
If you can keep winning doing that.
As long as you can keep winning doing that. So that's why I'm saying maybe this is still a gravy game this week at Cincinnati. Maybe this is still, you know, you're playing with house money type of thing. And if you can get a win, maybe we're going to go one more week here, try to get a W. If we don't, hey, we're still 4-1, and we're no worse than tied for the division lead. Mm. And then you're back home against New Orleans. You know, we're going to be playing one of the, you know, elite teams in the NFL, especially offensively, and we need our weapons back. And our weapons come back. Just a hypothesis, just a theory overall. Howard in Stratford, Connecticut says, what if Steven Jackson was healthy when Wilfork went out? What impact would that have had on that game? Well, what if, I think he's referring to you, was saying that earlier. Well, what if Amendola, Vereen, and Gronk were healthy? What impact would that have had on that game? I think that would have had more than offset whatever a healthy Steven Jackson would have brought, no?
Possibly, yeah.
He says all teams have injuries right now. The whole what-if scenarios that you proffer are always negatively slanted against the Pats. I go back a few weeks when you made the comment about opposing teams' wide receivers starting to catch the passes they were dropping as an issue for the Pats D. Well, what happens when the Pats' wide receivers start catching the passes they were dropping in the first few games? I guess we saw that in Atlanta when they scored 30 points. The whole what-if cuts both ways, negatively and positively, for the Pats and every team they have and will face this year. Coaches, players, no one ever plays coaches a perfect game. In today's NFL, the Pats only need to make a few plays more and a few mistakes less than the opposing team. I think that's a great point. Then you wonder, or perhaps you don't, why fans who listen think you're so negatively biased against the Pats, as you and I have discussed here on the show. Is these purely hypothetical scenarios that favor the opposition? You can critique the play of the team without dreaming up these scenarios. Their play is and has been far from perfect, but it has been good enough to go 4-0.
Well, to defend us just a little bit.
Sure.
As we said earlier, when we're this close to the team, you tend to see the warts more. Wouldn't you agree?
Of course. We see it all the time. We see things that there's no way, no way a fan, say, in Seattle, Washington, or London, England, or wherever they may be, could see, because we're here.
Yeah, and it's also part of our job to look for those things that could potentially go wrong. Any fanboy can stand up and say, oh, yeah, things are going to be great, Bill's the best, yada, 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 things will turn around. That does our audience no good if we're just bouncing back what they're throwing at us. We need to be responsible for looking at those things that could go wrong. That's part of our job as analysts, is to do that. You can take the rose-colored glasses look and say everything will be fine, they'll be great. But we're not doing our job if we do that. It's part of our job to dissect and to look for those things where the weaknesses,
as we say on Tuesdays, nitpick.
Well, yeah, because that's where those are the potential areas where things could go wrong. Mm-hmm. When someone asks us, how could the Patriots possibly lose to X opponent this week? Well, here's how. Because they're deficient in these areas, and these are the things that could go wrong. That's part of our job. We're not fanboys. We have a responsibility. So that's one of the reasons why we have to think in those negative terms. As the email,
because
reported.
you have to ask the tough question, you have to look at the dark side,
right?
Because the dark side is always a possibility.
Could be married to the most beautiful woman you've ever seen, but when you see her every day, you'll see her with, you know,
warts.
At her worst,
warts.
Yeah, she's still beautiful, maybe. But
does Giselle have warts?
I don't think I want to know.
I'm going to cut that for a drop. Does Giselle have warts? Well, where are those warts, John?
I don't know.
That doesn't mean you think she's any less beautiful, but you see things that others don't. Yep. You're closer to the situation than most.
Right. Right. Okay. I totally, I agree. I'm playing both, trying to hit both sides of the fence here, because clearly we took a lot of hammering for our negativism early in the year. And by the way, yesterday on the show, I do want to inform you today before we get to our word of the day here. I want to let you know that I upped my prediction. I said 10-6 to start the year, right?
You did, yes.
Well, since they won a game I thought they lost, I now say 11-5.
Okay. That's fine.
Is that fair?
That's very fair. I'll have to up mine to 10-6 then.
So is that official on the record, 10-6?
Well, it has to be, because they've already won four, and I said they were going to be 3-1. They're 4-0. So if I stick to my, the only caveat there
think,
is
right,
I could change my predictions
question.
As we go along.
Let me ask you a different question. Does this team still go 9-7?
I haven't gone through the schedule yet to know what I think about that, because, well, certain things, like, for instance,
it's right
I thought,
there in the window, if you can. I tried to leave it on this window here. On
what?
The window in front of me.
No,
oh,
no, no.
Right,
and I mean, I haven't actually gone through it and given my prediction. I know what the schedule is. I just haven't figured
that
out.
You want to go through it again?
Well, for instance, I didn't think when we picked these
games that
Atlanta was going to go through a rash of injuries the week that they played the Patriots.
But we also know that injuries are...
No, I know. But right? That's one of the reasons why it's impossible to say. I'll stick with my predictions and say, just bump it up one. So 10-6 now is the best they can do, because they're already one game better than I thought they were going to
be. Right, which is why I went to 11-5, and I thought that was eminently fair. So I say now, okay, I think 11-5 is a worst case scenario. It still means they're only going to go 7-5 the rest of the way.
Mm.
But if you look at it as of today, we're in week 5 now, getting ready to week 5.
Yep.
You got Bengals, win or loss?
Well, it's not prediction Thursday, but I'll go through it with you anyway.
Okay.
Loss, because that's what I predicted. And
right.
Nothing has changed.
Right. Is anything, in other words, what I want you to do is tell me, has anything changed from your original prediction?
No.
Saints, home.
Loss.
Jets.
Win.
Dolphins.
Win.
Okay. Steelers.
That's the one that could change, John, because I didn't think they were going to be nearly as bad as
they are
proving to be.
They are pretty bad right now.
And I had that as a loss.
Okay.
That might change. I can see myself giving them a win for that, but still, the Steelers usually play them tough. So
okay,
I'm leaning towards giving that flipping that to a W. Yeah,
right. Panthers.
W.
Broncos,
loss.
Texans. Based on what you know today.
I'll still go loss.
Okay. That's based on what you know today.
Yeah,
that's
still
what
go
I asked.
Loss. Yeah.
Browns?
Win.
Dolphins?
Win.
Ravens?
Loss.
Bills?
Win.
Okay. You have them now at 11-5. As opposed to
9-7. Yeah. Yeah.
You have them now at 11-5. So
right.
Technically, you got a 2-game improvement.
Okay. And I hadn't noticed that because I hadn't gone through the schedule.
By the way, I agree with that. That's why I improved yesterday to my mark to 11-5 as well. I'm right there in lockstep with you on just about every game right now, as of today.
Okay. Yeah.
The
right.
Steelers game is a swing game for me too. I would also tell you that looking at it, the Texans may also be a swing game.
Possibly.
You know,
boy. I don't know if I don't know what.
And I think the Ravens might be a swing game late in the year.
I don't know what whether I'm more impressed with the Seahawks comeback or less impressed with the Texans' ability to hold on at home.
Well, that was shocking, wasn't it?
Was it more that the Seahawks were that good or the Texans were that bad?
Did J.J. Watt look like he'd been in an MMA fight?
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy smokes, right?
He did.
He really did, huh? But that was an excruciating loss. Excruciating loss.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll jump into that a little bit more. All right. Before we go, business at hand. Ready to roll.
Yeah. Kevin.
Kevin.
There we go.
Somebody's going to wake up the
Ladies
maestro.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather around the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
So is Robin mad at me?
No, but she's intrigued.
Okay.
So this is the one part of the show that she says I have to listen to now every day.
Good.
Okay.
Appointment listening.
This is appointment listening now.
Okay.
So you've challenged her sufficiently.
I have.
Yes,
I have. And I might have been a little too harsh. I might have been gloating a little too much last week. So I'm going to go with, along that line, I'm going to go, today's word is expiation.
Expiation?
Mm-hmm.
E-X-P-I-A-T-I-O-N?
Yes,
expiation.
Any guesses as to what that might mean?
I'm trying to come up with something witty, but I can't.
expiation is essentially atonement. To make good for something that you have done wrong.
So you atone for...
I'm atoning for...
The error of your ways.
Well... The error of my ways in obviously picking the wrong prediction. My score was almost accurate, only was just flipped. I had said 30-24 Falcons. It's 30-23 Patriots.
All right.
And also to atone for my gloating for all the words that Robin didn't know that I brought up. So expiation.
Showing up the teacher.
Expiation is the word of the
expiation.
Day.
Expiation. Can you use that in a sentence? Silence.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to relate it to everything that we're doing here.
Crickets.
I felt
the crickets.
I felt expiation was necessary today based on my behavior last week.
Expiation was necessary.
Yes.
Based on your previous behavior. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well done. I don't think it was necessary, but that's okay. Thank you for that anyway.
Magnanimous gesture on your part. It certainly was.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, brother. We'll see you mañana.
Yes, we
right?
Will. Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly. We've got hour number two. Well, we're underway with hour number two, but we're going to take a break here. The question of the day. Hey, look, I'm not getting a whole lot of feedback here, I'll be honest with you. So it's time now to step up and let me know what you think about Aqib Talib. Your choices are very simple. A, sign the man or pay the man, whichever way you want to put it. B, franchise him. C, let him go and tell me why. webradio@patriots.com, 855-PATS-500, at JR Broadcaster, Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. Let's go.
The word off-season doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest prices on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance dance? You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios Triple Play online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected. The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at patriotsproshop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
All aboard!
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today. Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
Well, into hour number two here on Patriots Playbook. We'll go straight up to the top of the hour at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. We're here from 2 to 4 every weekday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and, of course, here on Patriots.com Radio, Patriots Monday and Friday, brought to you by WEEI, and we have that for you here on the website as well. In the meantime, we're talking Pats Bengals, and we're talking Aqib Talib. Fact of the matter is that he's off to a tremendous start, maybe better than anybody realized or anybody imagined. 4 picks in 4 weeks has him at the top of the NFL right now in interceptions. He has certainly played well enough against, you know, some of the bigger receivers that he's had to match up against this last week, Julio Jones and Roddy White notwithstanding. He'll have another challenge with A.J. Green this week in Cincinnati. He'll have more challenges on down the line. Now, I wouldn't exactly call him a shutdown corner, but he's a cover corner. Is he in the mold of Darrell Revis? Putting guys out on the island? No, probably not, because he still has a penchant for giving up the big play. He has been beat. He has been burnt. But the thing that I think that intrigues me most about Talib is that his athleticism is very, very obvious. The man can turn and run backwards, it seems like, almost as fast as he can run forwards. He can twist. He can turn. He can bump. He can grind. He can sprint. He can go side to side with lateral quickness and speed. He can do some things that, quite frankly, most football players cannot do. And that's what makes the position of cornerback, as Eric and I were talking about in the opening hour of the program. Position of cornerback, to me, you have to have at least, I personally think you have to have the most athleticism of any other position on a football team. Because you are asked to do different things that other positions are not asked to do. You got to run backwards. You got to be able to have eyes in the back of your head, which we criticize. Yeah, you know you do. We criticize players for not turning around on footballs. And we criticize because they say, well, that's how you're supposed to make a play. And if you face guard, you're going to get flagged for it. So we expect these guys to know when to turn around. And invariably, they don't. That's one of the biggest mistakes that I think defensive backs get flagged for or get criticized for, and yet there's no real foolproof way for a DB to know when to go. You know, I've always heard guys say, you know, you watch the receiver's eyes. Watch the receiver's eyes. And by the time you recognize what he's looking at, that may be the ball coming right down on top of your head. It's a split-second thing. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't, because it's just flat out an imperfect science here. But Talib probably does it as well as anybody can do it right now in the game of football. He's been burned a couple of times this year, but he's also made some big plays. In this regard, because knowing that he is on a one-year deal here with New England, 1 year, $5 million, they upped him. He's got a free agent, you know, potential deal awaiting him. If you're the Patriots, do you keep this guy around for the long haul? Do you lock him down? Do you keep him as a part of this, you know, growing defense? Do you keep him now? Is it any more important? And I think this is a part of the question that we need to ask here. Do you keep him now even more so because you don't have Vince Wilfork up front? I think you could make a case that you'd want to do that. The Patriots are clearly not going to have quite as much push. They're certainly not going to have quite as much stuffing ability, run stoppage ability in the middle. You're going to get more single coverage, single blocking, because Wilfork is he's usually taken on by two blockers, sometimes more. So this frees up guys to basically do their job without having to worry about Big Vince rumbling into the backfield. And if Vince is collapsing that pocket up the middle, that makes it easier for a guy like Aqib Talib to stay on his man a little bit longer and make a play. Is there any direct correlation now between Wilfork's injury and Aqib Talib's ability to continue to play well? See, I think that's a question that has to be answered here. So taking all these things into consideration, do you sign Aqib Talib? Do you keep him around? You bring him in at, you know, 3-4 years? Pay him $7-9 million a year? Do you franchise him? Thinking that, all right, we want to keep him around. We're not forced to be able to have to sign him to a long-term deal. Maybe we want to give him another 1 year to see how he does. But then you got to pay him the average of the top five salaries in the league. That's how the franchise tag works. And so you could end up probably owing him, you know, somewhere in that $7-8 million a year anyway. And is that a number that the Patriots are willing to pay that position based on their history and track record of not doing that? Or three, because you were so burnt by really through no fault of your own with the Aaron Hernandez fiasco in the offseason, knowing that he has, that Aqib Talib brought a little baggage with him to New England. But again, as we mentioned in the opening hour today, if you're joining us late, he's been model. He's been great. He's been engaging. He's been nice. He's been a leader in the club. He's been everything you could ask of him to be and then some. But knowing you've been burnt, do you risk it again? Do you risk it again? And then, what's the fallout going to be like if that happens? I mean, oh my goodness, it'd be Armageddon around here. If something, you know, bad happened. And it's kind of like, well, you didn't do your due diligence on Hernandez, which they said they did. And I believe them. You didn't do your due diligence on Aqib Talib. Well, did you? Maybe that's being done now. I don't know. Anyway, there's three basic questions. Sign him, franchise him, let him go. That's really what I'm looking at right here. What, you know, right now, the few responses we've had have been all sign him. I kind of expected that because I know that this is, you know, a fan's show and a fan wants results and a fan is going to do this and make these moves and you're going to express your opinions about a guy like Talib without revisionist history getting in the way. We know why, you know, this team is sometimes in the shape that it's in defensively because they have not valued the position of cornerback all that highly in terms of paying players to man the position. They could have done that with Asante Samuel. They could have done that with Samuel and didn't do that several years ago. So in that regard, pardon me, I just had to get a quick swallow there. One of these things when you still have the, I hate to be gross here, but you still have some of the nasal problems down in the back of your throat after fighting off a cold. Thank you, Mr. Collins. And when you do have that, it makes it really, really difficult to inflect your voice when you're trying to fight off that tickle that won't go away, right? So at any rate, that's the thought process here. Web radio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500 on the phones, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. Twitter says, Jeff, sign him. He brings the much-needed swagger to the back end of the D. Talib, Hightower, Jones makes people fear all three levels of D. Icarus says, difference between Asante and Talib is age. If Talib wants to break the bank, then don't sign him. Interesting. David on Twitter says, we should re-sign Talib to a 2-3 year contract due to the problems we have had with extending Hernandez and the other issues in the past. Okay, 2-3 years. But then again, would the player accept 2-3 years? I would ask you, David. Chances are very strong he's not going to accept that. He's going to want more of an extension than 2-3 years. You know, and if that's the case and you're only willing to go that and he wants more, then you're at an impasse. What do? You probably end up franchising him if you want the player. See, there's different ways that you've got to look at this. Different ways that you have to consider the overall worth and value of the player to the team at the present time. Here's one. Here's from GB, Greg, who says, John, what do you think will happen? The Pats franchise him. The Pats took the risk with the one-year deal, played the game with Tlaib. Based on his performance, he'll get a nice pay raise and spend 2014-2015 season in the same tryout mode he's in now. It looks like Tlaib is one of those guys that plays his heart out in contract years, so the Pats should ride that train as long as they can. I'll be honest with you, Greg, I'm kind of leaning that direction. If you have the option of franchising him, why wouldn't you? And I understand why players get upset. But when you're playing on a one-year deal and a franchise tag is going to be considerably more than the one-year deal you just made, okay, at least you're getting a big raise. So in a sense, you're being rewarded for the good year that you just had. And you're right. If you have another really good year and you have the incentive behind you, which in this case Tlaib would have, then you can go out and break the stupid bank. You absolutely could. If, of course, you look at it from the perspective that you and I are looking at it. We don't really know if the player looks at it like that. The player is going to do what? The player is going to, you know, he's the best that there ever was. That's the swagger that these guys play with. And so he's going to completely and totally overvalue his self-worth, and so is his agent. You have to hope that somehow, some way, reality sets in. Or you have to hope that the player is comfortable enough in his environment, within this locker room, within this clubhouse, within this stadium, that he doesn't want to leave. That, you know, I could go off for a couple of million more a year over the course of the 3 years or whatever it is, and I could make more money. But am I going to have a chance to win, which invariably you're going to have here? And, these players want to win. These players flat out want to win. It's all about the ring. It's all about the hardware. It's all about the bling. You know, whatever you want to say. Guys want to get paid, sure, but they also want the rings because they know the ring is what makes them, you know, it's what puts them in the history books. Were they a winner? Did they win? Ask Dan Marino how he feels about that. I really believe that, you know, push comes to shove. If you surround them with the right people and they allow you to take a leadership role in the clubhouse, which it seems now that this Patriots team is allowing Aqib Tlaib to do, especially in that defensive backfield, and this may be part of the reason, I certainly would think, why we're seeing this chemistry beginning to develop on this defense through 4 weeks, because Tlaib is directing some of that, then if you're comfortable and the money is relatively equal, then why wouldn't you just allow the system to take care of you? And if Tlaib is smart, yeah, continue to play your butt off. Let the system take care of you, because the system invariably will. I don't think the Patriots will do something stupid like, okay, your year's up, thanks, see ya, go sign someplace else. Because then you're just not getting equity out of a byproduct that clearly has some value. And that's just dumb. And the one thing the Patriots don't do really is make dumb decisions. We can probably count their dumb decisions on one hand. Maybe Asante Samuel was one of those. Maybe they do realize that. Maybe they don't want that to happen again. So take advantage of the system. You got a year. Play with it. I tend to think that that might be the best way to go. Let's see what else we got here. How about Patrick in Brooklyn? Patrick, thanks for calling into the playbook.
How you doing?
Good, man. What's up?
Couple things, John. First things first, regarding the signing of Tlaib, it's quite obvious that they have to sign him just based on their continued misses in the second round with DBs. because Belichick, he believes the value of the draft is in the second round.
Right.
And he used to stockpile second-round picks.
Second and third round, by the way.
Yeah, but if we go down the line, we'll see it's been one miss after the next to the point where it's almost been embarrassing. It's just that he's so good as a coach, he can put a little deodorant on, and we don't notice just how bad the misses has been. So
right.
His drafts haven't been all bad, but in terms of his picking of DBs, he just hasn't, you know, either through bad luck or misfortune or just, you know, bad scouting. He just hasn't been able to get any quality defensive backs.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to say is that the Patriot history with not paying a defensive player or sometimes undervaluing a defensive player has hurt them, and I'll give you a case in point. Colin Cowherd of
ESPN.
Done the Herd on ESPN. He said a couple of months ago that he felt not paying Seymour and trading him cost the Patriots at least one Super Bowl.
Yeah.
If you remember, I think you guys mentioned it earlier, Asante Samuel, he should have been paid. If you remember, Ty Law was let go. He went to the Jets in Kansas City, and he still had something left.
Right.
And I think really what it comes down to is Belichick has got to understand, we know you have your model, but sometimes you have to go outside of that when a player warrants it, and sometimes the player has to win. Deion Branch was let go because the amount of money he wanted was just too much, and they weren't going to bend. But occasionally, the player has to win. It's like almost like this guy Mesko, the punter. I was shocked when he was released.
Yep.
And what it came down to was the other guy just is making less money. But Mesko had been a part of your team and was a good guy in the locker room and just a good teammate. I mean, for the extra money, I think sometimes you keep these guys.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. That he was just a byproduct of the system, basically coming back to bite him. His contract continued to escalate, and over the course where this last year he was going to be making pretty decent money, 1.4, 1.3, somewhere in there, and it just turned out that in this year, that's when Ryan Allen came along, and back to back Ray Guy winner for having outstanding career at Louisiana Tech, and he can boom the ball, and he's only been so-so thus far, I would say. I don't really see where there's been any huge improvement. But the huge improvement, though, is something that won't be as obvious to you or I. And as you've already pointed out, Patrick, the improvement is in the pocketbook because the Patriots are saving roughly $1.1 million between the two players.
Exactly. Now, the other thing I want to point out is this. In terms of the defensive backs that they have now, which is Tlaib on one side and Dennard on the other, that is a combination where both guys are healthy. You're looking at probably, at a minimum, 3 to 5 years of really decent production. That's how good both of those guys are. I mean, Tlaib does the one thing our DBs have been known not to do. He plays the ball.
Yeah.
The guy makes into he's the best thing that we've had in the secondary since Ty Law. That's how good this guy has shown he can play. And if the Pats don't sign him, it's a mistake. Now, I don't know the offer he turned down in the offseason, but Belichick has just got to say, hey, if this is one time I got to overpay a little bit, and I don't mean overpay to where it just destroys your cap, but I mean if he's got to overpay somewhat and it's not too egregious, overpay and you can just, like with the punter, you made a cut there. So if you're going to cut the punter for just a couple of bucks, well, then that means you can overpay the DB a little bit and squeeze it from somewhere else.
You know, I have to admit here, Patrick, you're making way too much sense. however, that's not the way these guys think. But what you're saying is making a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, no, I totally think that way. And again, you've been running a great show. I love the way you phrase these questions to the audiences. And essentially, if Belichick wants to be able to compete when you're going to face a Denver with a Decker, a Demaryius Thomas, and a Welker, with those three receivers, if you can't take at least one of them away, you can't compete. He has to be signed.
Yeah.
Look, in the NFL, John, and I think you'll agree, there are three positions that get paid. The quarterback, obviously.
Yeah.
The left tackle, generally speaking, if it's a quarterback that's right-handed.
Sure.
And the defensive back. Those are the three most critical positions in the NFL based on the new rules. Many years ago, it might have been quarterback, left tackle, middle linebacker, but that's changed. So I clearly think that, you know, Belichick has to reevaluate the way he views the DB position, because you cannot just put four guys off the street back there, which he's done and gotten away with, except that that doesn't allow him to win the big one. It allows him to get there, but he doesn't leave with the girl. He gets to the dance, he looks at her, but he can't afford to take her out after the thing's over.
Right. That's a very good analogy, by the way.
Okay.
That's a good job by you. All right, Patrick. Yeah, good stuff. Absolutely good stuff by Patrick in Brooklyn. Here's Dave in Connecticut. Dave, you're in the playbook.
Hey, guys. Good show so far. And, you know, I just agree with a lot of people have said, including the guy in front of me here.
Yep.
You know, I talked to Mark at the pregame.
Mm-hmm.
And then I brought it up to him about Tlaib. Now, I agree with what you're saying. I mean, you know, I don't know what he's going to be looking for. And I don't. You know, I know that he you know, he signed that 1 year, $5 million with us. I really didn't, you know it was that big of a struggle. I knew there were some other teams interested in him, but he came back. All right. Now, yeah. I think, you know, you're absolutely right. You hit him with the franchise tag, and, you know, it's going to be a $2 million raise, and I think you should be happy with that, with the option of working on a long-term deal with this guy. I mean, you know, I agree with what you said. I agree with what everyone said, you know. He's definitely a shutdown corner. You know, he shuts down that side. I think he, you know, it's almost the Corey Dillon syndrome. You know, Corey Dillon had this bad rap in Cincinnati when he came to us. He was a model citizen. And then, you know, from everything I've heard and you guys reported, he's been the model teammate. And, you know, he's taken that leadership role. So, you know, I'm not saying, you know, you throw the Fort Knox at him, but we have to be realistic here. I mean, you know, just like the guy before said, Belichick has, in the past four or five drafts, gone after the backs, you know, from Rashad Dowling to you know, Tyrone Wilson. And then they haven't panned out for whatever reason, from injury, you know what I mean, or whatever it is.
Let me ask you something, Dave. If the sense of urgency here is greater than it might have been in the past, and I certainly can see why anybody would think that, because you have not had, as our previous caller and some of our emailers have intimated already, you have really not had this kind of talent back there, certainly since Samuel, but probably really since Ty Law. So if it's been that long that you've had an individual of this kind of ability in the backfield, and considering the fact that you've come a cropper on a lot of these, you know, value draft picks, you know, Rashad Dowling certainly comes to mind here, and a few others, you know, Tyrone Wheatley and some other guys like that. So if that's the case, don't you feel like this team should be a little gun shy about it? And
I don't know if they should be gun shy about it. I think that they should be talking to him now, to his agent at least, to get some kind of feelers to where, you know, where this guy's head's at.
Yeah.
You know, does he like playing there? I mean, he seems to enjoy himself there. All right, you know, he came from Tampa Bay, who, you know, I hate to say, you know, one of the lower echelon teams in the league, to a team that, you know, is playing for a Super Bowl every year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, that's a plus.
Okay.
You know, to having a quarterback, you know, on his team like Tom Brady, who, you know, a Hall of Fame quarterback. You know, so, I mean, there's some aspects that I think that the Patriots, and I don't think they need to rush into it. I mean, worst case scenario, you do use the franchise tag with them, you know, and continue to talk and try to negotiate with them on a, you know, a 2 or 3 or 4 year deal. It doesn't have to be, you know, a break the bank kind of situation here. I think, you know, you mentioned it, you know, players like to play for teams that think they're going to, you know, they're going to win.
Sure.
And they're going to have that chance to win a Super Bowl every year, you know, and I think, you know, He was what? Tampa Bay drafted him, what, I think, in the top 10 when they drafted him?
Yes, that's true. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he's definitely that top 10 talent, but he just had that rap on him, I guess, with Tampa. You know.
Well, yeah, he definitely got off to a bad start, and I think that's probably, you know, if he was not,
he did some foolish things.
Right. If he was not the I guess, risk, gamble, whatever you want to call it. If he wasn't that, if he didn't have some of these transgressions early in his career, he's not going to be on the New England Patriots roster right now.
Absolutely not. No, you know what I mean? I know, you know, we took a shot at him. We did.
And the Patriots have done, you still have to say, based on just, I'm thinking off the top of my head here, but on these guys that have been of questionable character that you've brought into the fold, you've hoped that they would work out, and some of them did, some of them didn't. I still think you're batting better than 500. I don't mean to mathematize this thing, because I realize that, you know, some of the things that have happened are obviously egregious, but I gotta tell you that, you know, I understand why teams take chances, because everything is equal. This is, the NFL is a parity league, not P-A-R-O-D-Y. It's P-A-R-I-T-Y. And because of that, every team is looking for that one little oomph, that little edge that you can get over the other guy.
I think he's one of those players that you need to, you know, secure.
Yes. In that regard. So you'd say, you'd definitely say then pay him, Dave.
I would, yeah. I mean, either you work out a contract with him, or you franchise him.
Right.
With the hopes of working out a contract with him.
Okay.
I don't know who else was in the running for him last year, or this year rather.
Nobody.
You know, but he came back to his, you know, 1 year, 5 year deal.
I don't think anybody was. I mean, if there was, I mean, you know, we didn't hear about it, but I don't think anybody was.
Well, you know, that's kind of surprising too, because you look what, you know, Tampa made that trade for Revis.
Well, I think that's part of his rep. I don't think people are convinced that, you know, Tlaib had turned the corner. You know, he was only here for a partial year last year anyway.
I agree what you're saying. I totally do. You know, but I think, you know, that's why I'm saying, I think you put out a feeler to his agent at this point and see where his head is at.
Well, I think Eric actually came up. Eric.
Who wants to be the highest paid corner in the league? I don't know.
Right, right.
And if that's the case, then New England has to reevaluate it and say, okay, then we're going to use our franchise tag on them next year.
That's very important. That's very important. You just touched on a very important thing. What does the player think of himself and his worth, and does he think he's the top corner in the league? And if he does, he's going to want to be paid like it, and that's probably not in the Patriots' best interests. But, you know, go ahead.
You know, and it never has been.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know. And you look at Brady, perfect example. You know, he took less money and redid his contract so they could sign players.
Right.
You know what I mean? There it is.
We thought they'd re-sign Welker, and that didn't happen, did it?
No. You know, and you know, I, you know, you hear that Wes wanted to stay. I kind of blame his agent to a certain extent.
Yeah.
I know there was, you know, obviously there was some bad blood between him and Belichick. I mean, he came out in that article in SI, and I was like, are you for real? I mean, can you man up and I mean, come on, Wes.
Right.
All kidding aside, you know, Wes Welker, I loved him when he was here, okay, and I, you know, obviously he's going to have a great time with Peyton, but who was Wes Welker before we made that trade with Miami?
Right.
Okay? You know, and I'm not saying that Tom Brady made him who he was, but that's who was throwing the ball to him. Okay, you know, he was a free agent with San Diego. He got cut, and he ended up in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And his claim to fame, as far as I knew, is I think he kicked a field goal against us in a game. Okay, or he punted, or he did something like that. It was either field goal or he punted. And that's when it was like, oh, this receiver kicked a field goal against New England in a game or something.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm not trying to disrespect Wes, but it was like, you know, Belichick benched him when he did his little toe rant with the Jets coach, you know, and he told him not to do it.
Yeah.
And he benched him, you know, for the first series of
that game. Yeah, so there were issues there already between coach and player, which may not exist right now. At least we don't think that they exist with Tlaib, because Tlaib has, as we've already indicated, to all points thus far, been a model person in that locker room and actually been a leader on the defensive side of the ball. So all things point to giving this guy a chance. We just don't know to what extent the Patriots are willing to give him that chance yet. Eric said in the opening hour of the program that a fair time to approach this would probably be at the bye week.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it needs to be, you know, I don't think it has to, you have to be signed tomorrow.
Right. But you might want to begin the discussion now before, if this guy continues to bust out of it and have an MVP type of year, then at the end of the year, it might be too late to get involved because,
you know. Well, that's what I'm saying. And like I said before, who knows? He might think that, you know, he's the greatest quarterback in the world and wants, you know, $100 million.
Right.
So New England can say, okay, you know, listen, this is where we value you at. and this is what we're going to do. We're going to franchise you at the end of the year because that's our right.
I don't think they're going to play their cards. See, the Patriots historically play their cards very close to the vest. So my guess is
the Patriots will know, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the Patriots. Well, sure. But they're not going to let Tlaib or his agent or anybody else, you or I or anybody, they're going to let us know that. They're going to say, all right, this is what you think you're worth. Let us, you know, they'll go back and forth on it. And then if they decide, well, here's what will happen. Push will come to shove. They'll ultimately decide that the player is or isn't worth what he's asking. And if he's not worth what he's asking, then, all right, is the player worth our keeping? And if they answer that in the affirmative, then they must franchise him. They don't have any other choice. They have to keep the guy. But you franchise the guy at a standard contract without the clauses that include all these citizenship things in it. That's the danger factor here.
That's true, too. I mean, isn't that kind of why Moss wore out his welcome? Because he got a little...
Yes, it is. Yes. Yes, that is correct. They just didn't want to put up with his guff anymore, and they didn't. And he was gone, and that was that.
When he was signed.
Right. So, if you franchise a guy, that's great, but you lose a little of the control. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. So, these are all things we're going to have to talk about.
On you real quick, you know, really a sad day for, you know, Big Vince with his Achilles.
Yeah.
And here's a question I have for you guys, not to, you know, mock fun of him at all, because he's a great player, but it's like in my circle, at least, the Patriot fans, it's kind of like the elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, I know Achilles' tendons are a pretty serious injury, and Vince isn't the smallest guy in the world. I'm not picking on him. He's a big man. What's the chance that this might be a career-ending?
I don't think there's any chance right now based on, you know, the speed in which the surgery was conducted. It was taken, the surgery was undergone the day after the injury occurred. So it tells me that it's a simple thing, that as long as everything heals and he rehabs properly, which I have no doubt that he won't do, that the healing process begins. He'll be up and around before you know it. And then he can come back and play. And I think that would be his intent. Here's the thing we talked about yesterday, Dave, that I'll bring up here again today. In sort of a bass-ackward way, this is going to come back out and help the Patriots because you realize a player of Vince's stature physically and everything else, he's in a position on the football field where after a while that beaten up just it wears and tears on your body. He's just, believe it or not, we'd love to have him out there. We'd rather have him out there.
Oh, absolutely.
But what? He has saved himself 12 games of pounding on those legs.
And like you guys say, I mean, you know, he's not just getting blocked by one guy. He's getting triple teamed.
There's no question.
I mean, he is the heart.
Yeah, he's hitting multiple players on every snap of the football that he is in a game. So this is going to save him 12 games of that pounding. So as far as I'm concerned, as long as his rehab is good, Dave, I think we got another year out of him. And you know, I hate to have to make that trade, but you know what? If that's the worst news, I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, and I agree. I think, you know, I don't know where we're going to – I think the kid, Vavone, did a good job, but I don't know if, you know, he's the answer. Maybe forced in on
– Well, you know, he's a rookie free agent, Vavone. So, I personally believe that, you know, you're playing with house money with a rookie free agent. And so let him go. Turn him loose. What can you do, big fella? Let us see.
Yeah,
and
let's see.
He'll get his chance. Yeah, he'll get his chance.
And I think, you know – who knows with this kid Armstead? I mean, I'm still waiting to see.
We all are. Nobody knows. The question was broached today. We didn't get an answer. So I don't know when we'll get one.
Obviously, you know, for some reason, wasn't he one of the highest paid unrestricted for
he came from the Canadian League. He came from the Canadian League after he was, you know, undrafted because he had a heart problem coming out of USC. But he made it
to like a high number two pick in the draft.
He made it through a year in the Canadian League. He got a clean bill of health. The Patriots put him through his paces. And unfortunately, though, he's come up with another, you know, health problem that we've been told is not the same, but we don't really know. So until that problem clears itself up and he can, you know, get it back out of there and practice, we just don't know. And so that's why we were talking yesterday about the possibility of, you know, looking to see who's available and all that kind of stuff. And when the Patriots decide to IR him, whenever that will be, Wilfork that is, then they'll have to make a subsequent roster move.
Yeah, they will. I mean,
and we would expect it would be Marcus Forston, but we just don't know.
You know, I think, you know, there were some people talking about, like, Seymour and stuff. And, I mean, you know, I find it hard to believe that he, you know, if he would come back or he's that.
Well, I doubt it. I think he's already made it kind of clear that he kind of likes doing what he's doing right now, which is being home with the kids. And it may be done for him. You never know. I'd be stunned if the due diligence wasn't done and the feelers weren't put out and they would say, hey, would you?
They're going to do that.
Yeah, would you? And they're just going to play would you with two or three guys to see if they do it. I think Gerard Warren is the guy that you might want to play would you with, you know, just because he's got familiarity and, you know, and he played real well here last year. So that might be a possibility. I would find that believable. But, you know, they may already have the answer in house, Dave. All right.
Good, dude. Good talking to you guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate the time. Good stuff today from Dave. He's all over it. Let's see. What do we have here? I think I had a couple of other. Yep. Here we go. All right. Let's get to Facebook. Shane says he will only be 28 through next season, Tlaib. He brings swagger to the D and from all accounts has been good in the locker room. It's hard to find a corner who can take on and win most battles with league's top end wide receivers. So, gotta sign him. Chris says, John, just want to thank you for your insight and love of the Patriots. I was pleasantly surprised with the win on Sunday as I had picked the Falcons to win that one. Yesterday's handle of Big Al was priceless. I knew he was going to mention Tebow as a result of Brady's fumble. But now onto the issue of Tlaib. Knowing Bill and his past decisions in paying players, I would presume that Bill will let him walk. Tlaib wouldn't be the first player to be a meaningful playmaker and has been denied the money due to him, Samuel and most recently Welker. Bill has the attitude that players are replaceable. There is no need to pay one player more than he wants. Imagine if we covered the cost for Welker. We wouldn't be relying on Wookiees to keep us in the game. Sorry for the ramble. Well, we are relying on Wookiees, but that's, you know, thank you very much. All right, Chris, thank you for the email and the Facebook post. He's writing us today from Grand Bay, New Brunswick, Canada. And speaking of Canada, let's go to the other coast in Kamloops. And Tim says, I can't imagine Tlaib wanting to talk contract. He gambled on himself by taking the one-year deal, and at the rate he's going, his price goes up every week. That being said, I want us to sign him long-term. As a fan, I can't be worried about stuff other than what I see on the field. And what I see on the field is excellent. Remember, he had Bolden contained, and it was when he went out that the AFC champ game changed. That's a good point. Regarding spikes, I think we'll see him featured more against teams who can actually run the football, especially with Big V out. Mayo and Hightower haven't exactly set the world on fire in coverage themselves. It's also a good point, which is why I think this week could be an important week for Brandon Spikes, because as we talked about in the opening hour of the program with Alex Marvez from Fox Sports, I think we all sort of expect the Bengals to test the middle of the Patriots defense with Will Fork out and to run the football. And they've got two good guys. One of them, I think we all know very well in Ben Jarvis Green Elvis that will attack the middle. And I don't know why you wouldn't. You're always going to look at the opponent and where you think the Achilles heel, pardon the pun, bad pun right now, but hey, you know, that's what it is. You're always going to attack the vulnerable part of a team as you perceive it to be vulnerable. You're going to make them stop you. It's going to be up to the Patriots to stop them. If I'm the Bengals, I'm running the ball. And I'm using that run to set up A.J. Green. There's no doubt about that. I mean, that's no-brainer. The Bengals are 2-0 at home. They're 0-2 on the road this year. And where are they playing this game on Sunday? Cincinnati, where they're 2-0. Yes, I know the Patriots are also 2-0 on the road. I didn't make my point, so that's why I didn't bring it up. You get the point. Cincinnati's better at home. So you're going to get their optimum effort. You're going to get you're going to get their best game. And the Bengals are thought to be one of the contending teams in the AFC, regardless of their 2-2 start. A lot of people think that they're going to win that division, and they may very well win that division this year. See no reason to think why they won't. Michael says, with respect to Tlaib and the rest of the defensive backs in the league, could you name the other top backs? Sherman in Seattle will try to claim he is. Revis will claim it too. I think you just hit it. Do I need to go anymore? There might be a couple of others. But I certainly think that you can put Tlaib top five, six, somewhere in that vicinity. Allen says, We have to extend Tlaib's contract ASAP. The longer we wait, the more expensive he becomes. And the more expensive he is, the less likely it is that the Pats make the deal. If we allow him to test the market, we could lose him. If we franchise him, he'll hold out and it will cost us. As you said, if we somehow win the big one this season, then he may just decide that he has his ring and he now just wants to get paid. We can all avoid this, or avoid all of this, by giving him his extension now. Of course, you give him an extension now, you might be giving him an extension that you don't have to give him. And you might not be getting the player that you think you're going to get. There's always a risk involved. It's a two-way street. Sean says, in regards to Tlaib, I say lock him up, pay the man. Maybe throw in a few incentives for good behavior. I would agree with what others have said. I'd wait till the bye week before I started talking deals. It's obvious he makes your team better, and he shores up a unit that has not been the strongest the last few years. So do whatever you have to. And Sean says, by the way, since everyone's revising their predictions for the record the team will finish with, I'm revising mine to 13-3. This is going to be tomorrow, I think, Kevin, we need to have Revisionist Thursday. I know it's usually Prediction Thursday. Maybe we need to have Revisionist Thursday. Does anybody want to change their prediction for overall record for this team?
We could do that. We could spend some time on that.
We might have to think about that. Sean says, I think they will lose. It'll be Denver and New Orleans, plus they're usually due for a trap game against some team they have no business losing to, like Cleveland or Carolina. I think they will win both games against Pittsburgh and Houston, just going with what we know now. Interesting, Sean. We might have to play with that tomorrow. I'm intrigued.
And maybe along with your score prediction that you send in, give a final record now that we're at the quarter pole.
Yeah, we might have to do that with we might have to do that tomorrow. David says on Twitter, he says, please help with understanding the Marquise Cole releasing and then re-signing circus. There's really no understanding to it. He's got the options. And, you know, Marquise Cole is a good player. He's a young player, but he's clearly behind the others in the pecking order defensively. So, you know, when they're making moves defensively, he's the one, because they've got the option to kind of move him back and forth between, you know, the active roster and the inactive roster, or releasing him, so to speak, then that's the guy they're going to deal with. It's kind of like being, you know, it's kind of like being in baseball and having options, you know, to go back to the AAA, which, you know, I remember when Kevin Youkilis broke up with the Boston Red Sox, was there any guy more on a yo-yo than Kevin Youkilis between Boston and Pawtucket? I mean, he was just back and forth almost every day, it seemed like. It's because he had the options until he becomes a vested veteran. And it kind of works that way with rookies. They have the option, you know, because they're still young in their careers of being sent to the practice squad or being released. And because they make the minimum, it doesn't cost them anything to release them. So that's why a guy like Cole is the one that's going back and forth. Keep in mind, though, that they only release him, David, not because they think he stinks or anything. They release him because they know they can bring him back. And because other teams don't know enough about him, they feel like the other teams aren't just going to be, you know, standing in line to get him. Now, it would benefit the player if somebody else picked him up. Somebody else picks him up, they're going to sign him and they're going to keep him on the roster for the year. So to the player, it really shouldn't matter. I'm getting paid the same anyway. And if another team picks me up, yay, I get to stick around for a while. So it really doesn't hurt anybody, and it's just a business formality more than anything else. I don't think it bothers the player, because he knows, he's been told already by the team, you know, this is just a contract move. We got to send you so we can make some moves here, and then we're going to bring it right back as soon as we can. And that's what happens. It's what happens when you're basically the 52nd or 53rd player on a 53-man roster. And that's what he is. He's a situational player. He's a 6th, 7th, really, or even 8th defensive back. And he's mostly a special teams guy. So he doesn't have a definitive role. He's got to go back and forth. Howard says, regarding Tlaib, extend him now. They've been looking for a cornerback of his caliber since Asante Samuel left. Yes, the risk is that he gets fat and lazy once he gets his payday, but the contract can be structured to mitigate that risk and keep him incentivized to stay on the straight and narrow and continue to produce on the field. And keep in mind, again, if you franchise him, you lose the option to keep him incentivized, as you say. Greetings, John, from Cotter. I believe I pronounced that right. It's Cotter, right? I know it used to be Qatar.
Yeah, it's Qatar, Cutter,
yeah,
whatever you
Cutter,
want.
Cutter, right? I would like the Patriots to sign Tlaib to a long-term contract, 4 to 5 years. It makes sense for Tlaib to be a part of a competitive franchise, and the Patriots have been unable to find a cover corner for years. However, if Tlaib is expecting Revis money, I'm doubtful that he will be re-signed. Speaking of Revis, I wonder if he will be looking for a new employer next year with all the chaos in Tampa. That might be. Picture it, Tlaib and Revis. Oh, I don't want to picture that. Just don't want to picture that. That could be trouble. David says, what do you think of bringing Andre Carter or Mark Anderson back? Well, they did have Carter in for a workout a few weeks ago. Two, three weeks ago, maybe. I believe it was right toward the beginning of the year. My guess is, you know, I really don't know about Anderson. I don't know about his current physical status to know whether or not that's viable. But I would tell you that in terms of Andre Carter, they might say to him if they like what they see, all right, you're on standby. So stay tuned. If something happens, and when something happens, we'll call you. I don't know if that something happening is, you know, happened with Wilfork going down because Carter's a defensive end, not a tackle, but it is, you know, about the front four. But they did work him out. Nathan from Southern Cal says, guys, we need a big body that can push in the pocket that is familiar with our system. Having said that, any chance we sign Bianca? Oh, that's just not right. She'd squash you, Nathan. She'd absolutely squash you. What else do we have here? John says, Rook, you say Bill Belichick should just answer the question by saying, I'm not answering that. Do we know if he can actually say, I'm not answering that question, or will he get in trouble with the NFL? I don't know that he'll get in trouble. He has the right to say or not say whatever he wants. If it's about, you know, injuries or whatever, then he might, but... Actually, that's an interesting point, John. That's an interesting point. Maybe he feels like, I would say it's twofold here, maybe he feels like tweaking his nose, as we all know he loves to do at the NFL, and so that's why he answers the way he does. Or, legitimately, he feels like, well, I'm not sure what I can say, so this is the best I can do. Interesting. He says, on signing Tlaib, I say we try to sign him to a Patriot-friendly deal now. If you cannot sign him to a friendly deal, then wait until we get closer to the end of the season. Age is an issue. He'll be on the decline the next 2 to 3 years. Again, he's 28. So I do not break the bank at any point. We should not be the desperate girl with braces from high school. Nice analogy there, John. Very few have felt like John, however. Very few. Let's see. Mark from Regina, Saskatchewan. I would pay him the money in the offseason. We haven't had a good corner since Samuel, and Dennard is a good second corner, and between the two and McCourty, we have a solid back end. They need to build a defense over the next few years along with the receivers, so when Tom retires, they can focus on just bringing in another QB with a solid defense and weapons for him to succeed, because while Tom can win with a bad defense, not many QBs can, so I say pay the man, or can, so I say pay the man in the offseason and lock him up. So there you go. All right. Can we get him? Oh, some just popped in. Yay. I'll get these in real quick. Mark says, John, when the Pats failed to sign Asante Samuel, Pat's defensive secondary suffered and really have not recovered until we signed him last year. His game on Sunday was masterful. The Pats need to sign him. I don't believe they have a franchise option based on his contract. No, I think they do. They can, I believe they can, they can do that. We're just beginning to pose a solid defense against the pass. It's frustrating to give up big plays. Remember the Ravens playoff game? We shut them down until Aqib left the game with an injury. Now you know what happened. Mary says, I'm for signing Tlaib. It is spurious. Ooh, that's an Eric word. Spurious to put him in the same sentence as Hernandez, and I'm undecided on the Hernandez guilt. I'd have to see a lot more real evidence than the circumstantial I've heard about so far. John, thank you for using words like speculation regarding the injuries being reported by other media outlets. Please tell Eric for me his use of words like the report makes it sound more official than some random sports reporter writing gossip, for that is all it is. Okay, I'll tell him, Mary. Thank you, and I'm sure Eric would appreciate that. Garland from Seattle, who hates the Seahawks, says, I think it would be easier to sign Tlaib now compared to the end of the season. Patriots' weak defensive backs have always hurt them. Pats really need this guy. When you get someone of his caliber, you need to keep him. I would wait a few more games to see if you get the same output from the guy If so, then you need to secure him. Kind of goes in line with the general consensus, which seems to be, let's talk contract, but let's wait a few more weeks. I think that's been the general consensus today. This is from Steve and Killeen, who says, I saw that we brought Cole back. My feeling is he'll be a special teams and supporting second-level guy for the defense. He has Troy Brown-like size, so potentially he could be moved to a cornerback position, even though he's listed as a safety. I agree with that. And I think Pat's Nation is in agreement. Let's ink a deal for Tlaib. We all agree he's bringing swagger, attitude, nasty sauce to add to the team. You might as well put TB12's money to use now, since it didn't go to keeping Welker, as we had hoped. That's an excellent point by you, Steve. All right. Vince, you get to... it's not Vince. It's Vivek. I don't know where you're writing from, Vivek. Where are you writing from? It doesn't say. At any rate, he says, thanks for the reply. You and your listeners have amazing knowledge, and it's really educational to newbies like me. Thanks. Absolutely, you're welcome. And he says, when is Amendola back? And I said, don't know, but he asked this question late yesterday, and I answered him back via email, because I do try to read all the emails. As you well know, I've done this for a long time. You take the time to call into the show or write to the show or whatever. I try to, if I can't answer everyone, I certainly try to read everything that comes across. And the answer is, we don't know. He does seem to be closer. Eric said on the opening hour of the program today, he would not be surprised if it was this week. That would be a switch. Actually, Amendola coming back before Gronk, but it is a possibility, and we'll know more very, very shortly. All right, out of time. Thanks again to our guest, Alex Marvez from Fox Sports 1 in the opening hour of the show, Eric Scalavino from PFW. He'll be back tomorrow, as will Russell Baxter. Inside the Playbook, our pro football guru will join us in hour number two. And hang on.
Reedy.
I got it. Thursday's guest is Joe Reedy.
Cincinnati Inquirer.
Yes, Cincinnati Inquirer.
Bengals beat writer.
Bengals.
That should be a good one.
Beat writer.
Get a good look at the Bengals.
Yes, absolutely. So Joe Reedy will join us in the Playbook tomorrow to look more specifically at those 2-2 Bengals. Same patch time, same patch channel manana, kids. Yeah, I said it.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.